You know, sometimes it seems that when you're in a group like this, our thoughts, for whatever reason, seem to come together and focus together on an area that seems often not related. I think about the lesson that Kurt gave this morning, and I read Randy's bulletin, and we all seem to be thinking somewhat along the same lines of profiles in courage. And when I think about profiles in courage, I go back a few years to the mid-50s when some of you weren't around, and there was a book that was written by a former president, John F. Kennedy, when he was a young senator, and he was hospitalized, or at least bedridden, for almost a year. And he wrote this book, Profiles in Courage, in which he talks about 8 senators, beginning with John Quincy Adams and coming up to some more modern senators. And the book was titled Profiles in Courage because he was talking about the courage of these individuals as they tried to stand for what they thought was right in the things that they did within their lives. And out of this have come the Profile in Courage Awards. And this is the trophy that's given on an annual basis at the Kennedy Center by the Kennedy family. And one that struck me as being particularly unique was the fact that it was given to some 3,000 people following the disaster of September the 11th, when the Profile in Courage was given to some 3,000 first responders, firemen, policemen, and others who responded, and many of whom lost their lives in this. And you can see our senior senator here, young Ted Kennedy, and John Kennedy's daughter, Caroline, who is responsible for giving out these rewards. And I put the next one in because I was hoping that Tom would be here, and this is the Landrum Hotel in downtown Boston. And in 1974, there was a fire that took place in this very upscale, by then a condominium building, one of the first condominiums that was around. And it didn't seem to be really a particularly bad fire because they had it under control and out in about 3 hours. But when the firemen went in to clean up, the southeastern part of the building actually collapsed, and 9 firemen lost their lives, and 8 others were injured. And on Commonwealth Avenue, there is the fire memorial to these 9 individuals that lost their lives. And if you look closely, you can see the fireman helmet and their jacket. Well, these are profiles in courage in a secular sense. But what I want to talk about this evening are those profiles in courage from a spiritual sense. And I'm going to describe about 5 vignettes, or little short stories, some of which you may find that could apply to you. And I want you to think about how you might handle these little vignettes should they apply to you. And the first one is for our young people, particularly our young college students and those people that might be going off to school somewhere. And it just simply says you are a young person who goes overseas to study for a year in a foreign university. And you might say, well, you know, this doesn't happen to people around here. But you know, we've had 2 young ladies that this, Stephanie and help me, somebody remember?
Brittany
was in Latin America and China, and Stephanie was in the UK and for a while in France. And in both cases, there was a small church there, but it was a 2-hour drive from where they were staying, and none of the Christians there spoke English, and you do not speak any of their language, and nobody will report your activity or habits to anyone in the U.S. who would know you. The point is, here you are going off into a land where nobody knows you, where you don't speak the language, and nobody's going to report back to mom and dad or to your congregation how you responded in this situation. So spiritually, what would you do during this year spent overseas? Let's look at Joseph. You remember Joseph? He was in a situation very much like the one that we just described, except for he wasn't going off to a university setting. He was forced into slavery into a foreign land. There was none, be it Egyptian or otherwise, who held faith in the true God. Joseph was the lone believer in the land of Egypt, where he had been sent into slavery. No one cared about his faith, and no one who knew about his faith would ever get a report back, because remember, his family was a long way away from where he was. Nobody in Egypt cared whether he quit the Lord, and yet he always did the godly thing, even if it destroyed all the progress he had made. And you remember when he was assigned to Potiphar's house, and Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, and he ran away. He fled from that temptation, and as a result, he ended up in jail. It takes courage to live up to your convictions when you are alone and separated from those that can help you or might be able to report on the things that you do or you don't do. Well, let's think about another one. You were always in attendance at worship and Bible study, an excellent teacher, showing love for others, a natural leader. Brethren, consider you an example of what every Christian should be. You've got a good job, a job that you enjoy, and you've been promoted, and things are just going great, and you're respected by your colleagues and your supervisor. But all of a sudden, there's a change made in your work environment that you can no longer talk about God and about Jesus Christ, and it just requires you to ease your faithful example, thereby reducing your influence and respect among your work colleagues and also among your brethren. And if you don't do this, you're going to lose your job. Other Christians in the workplace where you happen to be working, and there are some other Christians, they go along with the new policy and they keep their job, hoping things will soon get better. Well, considering what is at stake, how do you handle this? Well, again, let's turn to scriptures and look at our friend Stephen. Again, Stephen was very much in a situation like you could find yourself in under this vignette. He was, as you were, highly respected and inspirational in the effort that he did as a Christian. Stephen was arrested and brought before a high court and charged with serious crimes that carried life-changing, even life-ending consequences. If he softened his preaching and lived a quiet Christian life, he probably would have been released from jail with little consequences, except maybe one of a diminished spiritual example. And yet we know that Stephen refused to compromise his work of faith. And what do we find when we read in the book of Acts? He preached boldly, and as a result, he was stoned. Again, it takes courage to live as you should under such circumstances. Well, I couldn't let this one go. I put this one in for Bill and Mo and me, for the old men of the congregation. You've lived in the same part of the country for all 65 years of your life. That's not exactly true in our case. Your relatives are all within easy driving distance, and you don't really ever plan on moving. This is your home, and you really like it here. But one day, you receive a letter from Idaho. Andrew from Idaho. Dear Mo, dear Bill, dear Wally, we're a small church here in Idaho, and we need your help. None of us have been Christians for very long, and we desperately need a faithful, mature, wise Christian to help bring stability and maturity to our little congregation. We've contacted others, but no one will come to be with us, and we've heard you're a faithful and respected Christian. And would you and your spouse move here to strengthen us in the faith? You know, you don't have to preach or teach, although that wouldn't be turned down. And all we need is someone with a mature, consistent example to worship and serve among us. If you come, we believe that great things will happen for the Lord in our region. Well, you've lived in this part of the country all of your life, and your relatives are here, and you've never planned on moving, and one day you receive this letter just begging you to move to Idaho in order to strengthen and help establish a small, lone group of Christians. And after all, you know, this is not Boston, this is Idaho. And this requires a commitment at least several years in order to be successful. What's your response going to be to that letter? Well, let's again turn to Scripture and think about Abraham. He was not so different from a 65-year-old man, but he was a little older. He was 75. And he was living among his relatives when God told him to leave and travel far away. God didn't tell him where he was going to go. Hey, this letter says you're going to go to Idaho. And this is only for a few years, but in the case of Abraham, it's going to be for the rest of his life. He knew of no faithful group awaiting him upon his arrival, but there's a small group here. And yet he took his wife and his possessions and went. At 75, he gave up a familiar, secure life for a life far away with fresh struggles and challenges. Again, I would suggest to you, this takes courage. Well, you're kind of that one who reminds others in times of trouble to keep God first, not to compromise obedience while trusting in his intervention. So you're the one that, you know, times are tough for somebody else, they're troubled out there, but you're going to say, you know, don't let it bother you. Remain faithful and obedient to God. In a problem requiring this type of trust, you pursue a compromise in your obedience to the Word. And you know what? Your attempt doesn't solve the problem, and you still have to face the issue, but have publicly shown yourself adverse to keep the Lord first in times of difficulty. You have undermined your own spiritual influence. You have told other people to remain faithful, but when it came to you, you gave in. How do you handle the lingering problem? Can you still teach God first? Well, let's think about Hezekiah in 2 Kings chapter 19. His situation was very much like the one I've just described. He had a strong public adverse, or an advocate of obeying God first. But you know, he tried to buy an invading Assyrian army by stripping God's temple of its valuables and giving them as tribute. Instead of doing what God wanted him to do, he said, I'll just take all of these things that are God's and I'll give them to the king of Assyria. And by doing that, I'll be able to stop this invasion. Well, guess what? Assyria took the tribute, but they still came against Jerusalem anyway. So Hezekiah's practical solution impoverished Jerusalem while encouraging and enriching his enemies. Hezekiah had to humble himself before God and before the people, asking the Lord to somehow intervene for his weakened nation. Again, this took courage to do that. Let's look at another vignette. You've never been a strong Christian, and your reputation is one of moral weakness. Your workplace becomes involved in an activity that is both illegal and sinful. If you do what is right, the company will probably fire you and will definitely retaliate by firing you, or your company's probably going to find out if you go against them. They'll retaliate by firing you and filing lawsuits against you. With your reputation, nobody will be swayed to join you, and you cannot afford a high-priced attorney to battle the company's mega lawyers. So here's a situation where you're not a particularly strong Christian. Something's beginning to happen in your company that's illegal, immoral, and corrupt. What do you do? How do you handle this? Again, let's look at a scriptural example of how someone handled this. Remember Rahab? Her situation was not too undifferent from that which I described. She didn't have the greatest reputation around. In fact, she was a prostitute, a harlot. The city that she lived in was marked by sin. At the risk of her life, she hid the Israelite spies and aided their escape from the city. She didn't know how light infantry could take a fortified walled city such as hers, but she decided on a course of action, and for once, she was right. Remarkably, the city lost the battle, and she was the only one spared for her judgment. So once, she made the right judgment. The point here is that even if you are a weak Christian and you find yourself in a wrong situation, you too can make the right decision. It only takes courage. Maybe you recognized one of these events in your life that required authentic, real courage. Courage is only needed when something I value is threatened. Courageous ones proliferate in the Bible. All we have to do is look at Hebrews chapter 11. And sometimes, as a result of their courageousness, they receive marvelous blessings. But more often than not, when they faced adversity and made the right decisions, the consequences for their faithfulness was not all that rewarding. Case in example, Stephen, the person that was sawed in half, and all of those unnamed people in the book of Hebrews. True courage does what God says is right, accepting any risk that comes with our faithfulness. There are a number of passages, I think, in Scripture that are inspiration for courage. One of these is Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 11. Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen, and without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who seek Him. And in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, this great race that's being described. And you can just picture yourself in a Colosseum running this race. Therefore, since we have so great a crowd of witnesses surrounding us, Think about those witnesses in chapter 11 that are yelling and saying, come on, you can do it. You can do it. But not only do we have this cloud of witnesses, we also need to lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, whatever it may be, and let us with endurance run the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus Christ, the author and perfecter of sin. We've got a cloud of witnesses that's encouraging us. They're right here in this room. But we have to get rid of whatever sin it is that's encumbering us. And as we run this race, wherever it is that we go, keeping our eye on Jesus at all times. And then in Romans chapter 15 and verse 4, whatever was written in earlier times was written for our instruction, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope. It doesn't matter what situation we find ourselves in, whether it's going off to a college where no one knows us, or to a land where we're not known, or if we're confronted with something in our workplace that's wrong, if we'll simply remember that those things that were written were there, so that through perseverance and the encouragement of the Scriptures, we might have hope and we can get through all of these. So, if you find yourself facing no scriptural accountability, remember Joseph. If consistent faithfulness and examples threaten your livelihood or your lifestyle, keep in mind Stephen. If obedience brings unwanted changes, remember Abraham. If you're caught in spiritual weakness, keep in mind Hezekiah. If a life of moral weakness pressures you to follow an erring crowd, remember Rahab. We just ask you as we close, what is your profile of courage? I'm sure that I could talk to any and every one of us in here, and you would tell me, yes, there's something in my life, something in my job, something somewhere that has the potential to cause me to stumble. And I would say to you, that's your profile of courage, if you'll just stand for what God has asked you to do. You can get through it, regardless of the situation. So there should be someone here this evening that has found themselves in a situation where they have allowed their profile of courage to not take the place in their lives that it should have. We would encourage them in whatever way that we can to come now as we sing the song that's been selected.